Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, British champs wrapped up on the weekend, so we have our medalists going into the World Indoor Championships, but obviously there is still a bit of time to make those teams. We're going to chat through those results, we're going to chat through the results elsewhere, and we've got some guests on who want to talk about wave lights, they want to talk about a lack of depth for the champs. And Matt also sat down with the Higgins brothers last night post-champs to chat through the crazy kind of year or so those two are having in the sport. Matt, how are you though, first of all, mate? How's your weekend?
Oh, it's good, mate. I mean, I spent probably all of it consuming all of the athletics and that was on, to be honest. Like, I felt like I didn't get much done. Actually, I did. Me and Kath built a bit of a DIY bench. We're putting a nice bench with our dining room table. So, yeah, I actually did do a bit of multitasking and squeezed in watching a bit of football. So, it's a good weekend.
There you go, mate. I've been in Bulgaria, so there's they don't show much of the athletics.
Do they not?
Over and the Winter Olympics was on a 10.
Yeah, that has been good. That's been really good watch.
But no, so I caught up yesterday, but got back. I get back to Cardiff AM yesterday. And
straight
then
into work.
Straight into work. And then caught up on British champs last night. What I had seen, I saw Keely's race over the weekend because that was kicking about. But everything else was yesterday, actually. So just catching up. But actually, as I've said on the pod before, I sometimes prefer catching up because I can skip through all the
Yeah, we know you're impatient. Yeah, no, there were some good races. And I mean, do you want to start with Keely's 156? What did you make it out? What did you make of the decision to pass on that final?
Yeah, see, I knew you were going to ask me this because I think, yeah, classy run out, first race. It's cool that she was there, but then I'd just be like, why wouldn't you just go and win the final the next day?
Go and win the final.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what was it? 204, 205? She could have coasted a 2-4 and qualified for this thing, and then run a 156 in the final, put on a show.
Still done it both ways, right? She could have run 156 yesterday and then won the final.
Yeah. She look, I get it in many ways. You know, this is an athlete who's in her absolute prime. She's going for a world record. You know, does she do the world record on Thursday night? I strongly believe so. You know, if you're running 156 in Birmingham, it's not the fastest track in the world. Although we have seen some fast times there, I've got to admit, but you know, Levan is like world record home. I mean, we've seen so many good 3000s. Jakob broke the mile record there last year. We've seen some great races there. So I think she got a knockoff 0.5. Was it 155.8? Something like that. So she got a knockoff half a second. I think she'll do that. She'll break the world record. And you know, I do get it in many ways. You know, you've only got a small window in your career where you can realistically attack world records. For me, this would be the year where she goes after, you know, every record she can. It'll start indoors and outdoors. She's going to gun for that world record. You bet your life on it. It's nothing. I think there's not much that excites her now except just getting those records. And yeah, you know, she's still, you know, there's still a long way to go in her career. But I think just where she is, she's going to see how far she can push those.
Well, I think that's it. She's cemented herself in the last couple of years as certainly the best in the world and potentially one of the best ever. And the only thing that's really missing from that is the records, like you say, because it's not like, I don't know, it's not like with a 5 and 10K athlete where you can like win double doubles here, there and everywhere. She's only going to like win the Olympics in the eight. So she's got a long time to wait before she can go do that again, you know? So it's not, I think it's the records that.
But yeah, you know, I think it's you know, if that is your preparation that you need to go through in order to break the world record on Thursday night, do you pick a different race? Do you sort of you know, I guess you know, she's delivering in front of a home crowd, which is cool.
But I feel a bit sorry for Boffy, right?
Yeah,
you just got that third British title, but you just like
would have been fun for Boffy to match up against her for sure.
Yeah,
you know, 157.
She'd rather be finishing with a silver medal, but she's had a good dust up and just pitched herself against one of the best. And yeah,
Chase and maybe Boffy would have seen Keely run 156 and think what could I have done? You know, Boffy looked like she worked hard for that 159 though, mate. You know, so I think her 157 potentially bit of an outlier, and you know, sort of that 159
different environment though, isn't it? Like,
British champs fight. Yeah, I guess
it's done. And I think that's the thing as well. And yes, I know Keely like doesn't feel like she needs to win a British champs, but it is just a bit of a shame that like athletes don't want to just finish their careers and be like, oh yeah, I was 10-time British champion or whatever, you know? Because yes, you can be chasing world records, you can be chasing Olympic golds, but surely it's nice to know that consistently you were the best in your country at your trials. Yeah.
It's a cool stat. It's a cool, you know, for me on British champs, we'll get into it. You know, we've got some callers who want to air their opinions on that, but there's just a lack of incentive. There's a lack of incentive for top athletes to compete at the British champs. I think there's a lack of incentive for a lot of people to compete at the British championships. It really is, especially on a weekend where you've got, you know, a million other races going down at the same time. So, I mean, so that was Keeley's 156. Very, very impressive. And all it told me was this girl's going to go break the world record. That's what it told me. Yeah, she looks in absolutely amazing shape. I guess a shame not to see Georgia Bell, shame not to see Josh Kerr. Josh Kerr, did we, you know, I expected him not to show up really, you know, traveled over, what was he, said he just didn't have a good flight or something flared up on the flight, whatever. So didn't contest the 3000, pulls out late. I just think, you know, you talk about, yeah, Boffey not being able to race Keeley. It's a shame for those, but, you know, a lot of guys in that 3000 would have loved to race Kerr. Mm. Same in the women's, you know, in the women's 1500, I imagine. And a lot of people buying tickets on Sunday would have loved to watch these athletes. And so they've been denied.
Like, and if Keeley's said before, maybe this Saturday you sell more tickets, right? Like, and then we're part of the problem as well, right? We're talking about British champs results and we go straight into someone who won the heat, but then DNS'd in the final.
We should be celebrating the actual races because they were good races.
Yeah, mate. Let's chat about the women's 3K, to be honest, because I think that's the one we build as that we've got a big hitters in there. Like, we're going to actually have a bit of the race. Like, unfortunately, not actually many athletes in the field, but out of front, we've seen championship record from Hannah Nuttall, Kate Snowden trying to go with her, but just not being strong enough, essentially. Like, I know Hannah Nuttall closed quick, but just couldn't stay with her. Like, it was a pretty long way out from home that she started to get dropped. And I think Nuttall just knew that's what she had to do, is take the sting out of Snowden.
Nuttall is too good right now. She is looking very impressive. And I just got to give it to her, because a few years ago, 2024, you know, you had her and Izzy Fry at Europeans, and you look at what Nuttall's done since then. She's just gone from strength to strength every single year, and she is looking like a real polished 3K, 5K runner now. She's running some seriously fast times. You know, the way she closed out that race.
About 2:45 last K.
2:45 last K, yeah. I think last lap or so, 63 maybe. I'm just going on what I took note of when I was watching the race, so I haven't actually fully checked the split. But yeah, it was good last 400. And you know, that's the style of race she's going to have to run at the World of Doors. So for her, that's good practice. You know, she is going to expect a big wind-up at World of Doors, a vicious last, you know, 400, 600 of that race. But just looking so good and thinking ahead to Outdoors, is there a chance that we can... Is Europe too deep to get a medal? I'm just thinking, so you've got Bazzicletti and you've got, you know, I saw Diane Van Es ran 14:33 on the roads, but Can Nuttall, is she starting to come into the question for a medal at the European Championships?
I certainly think she'll pitch herself there, which is half the battle sometimes.
Or the Commonwealths, you know, obviously you got the Commonwealths as well. Like, it's a little bit harder to call.
I think her and her team will be thinking, can we, like, shoot big, shoot for a medal? And I think once they're doing that, and obviously they're close enough that that's the right thing to do. And if you start doing that, then you give yourself a shot, right? Having serious conversations about it, and they start to believe they can, then why not? Like you say, apart from Bazzicletti, she's probably the only outlier. I mean, to make the team, depending on who competes, like if you've got Innes in there, like it's gonna be tough to, not tough for Hannah Nuttall, but that's a good showing in itself to the two of them and how the British champs goes. And
for me, it depends where Laura Murin's stuff goes as well. You know, is she going to commit to the five? Nuttall at the moment is hands down our best 5,000 meter runner. For me, hands down. She's looking great. She's looking fast, doing a job over 3,000. Yeah, she was very impressive. Eloise Walker, you know, Snowden, Eloise Walker in there as well. You're right. It was a small field. Walker does the running early. I was surprised not to see Elise Thorner in there. I thought that was a bit of a shock potentially. And this is, I think, a lot of athletes who are on the cusp of potentially chasing a standard might look at the British champs and go, well, you know, I know there's going to be very few people getting selected for the World Indoors because very few people have the standard. I'll pass on champs and I'll see if I can get the standard, because you're not going to have, if you do, you know, if Thorna went and run the 3000 at champs, not really going to run the standard there, then has to go and do another 3,000 a week or two later to try and get the standard to qualify. It's too much, you know, and then you've actually got to go to World Indoors and actually perform. So, you know, potentially we might see people just try and get a good time out, you know, try and qualify for the Worlds. But the standards are exceptionally hard. So I think if you haven't got a standard yet, I don't know how many people are going to go and get that standard in the next, 10 day, 2 weeks or whatever.
No, unless you're like a 800, 1500 runner, maybe. But 3K, yes, it's too hard.
Yeah, agreed. Not always impressive. Men's 3K, Tom Keane and McCluckie. It was great to see them two do battle. And actually, just a big fan of those two. I want to see more guys, you know, they're developing through, and, you know, Tom Keane, McCluckie, whether they choose 50, you know, whether McCluckie goes 1500 or 5000 outdoors, I think time will tell. Tom Keane probably will definitely step down to the 1500. We need challenges in both of those events. You know, the men's 5K is an event which, you know,
we need challenges in the 5K, mate. We just need some, like, front runners, really.
Yeah,
compared to our other events.
Yeah,
we've got no one that is on the level of our 8:15.
The move to the roads for a 13:20 5,000 meter runner is too tempting.
Yeah,
it's too tempting. If you've run 13:20, 13:30, the move to the half marathon, the move to the marathon, 10, you know, it's too tempting for them, you know. But honestly, I think if you're at, you look where Scott Beattie is now, he can qualify for LA 2028. Like he can, like he's already running 13, well, he's run 13 O's, but you know, he's consistently now starting to see, you know, a couple of his indoor results, 13:20, sub 13:20. He could have gone a lot quicker yet the other day, blew up big time in that. Not blew up, he miscounted the lap. So his last lap was a 40 second 200, but he looked like he could have run 13:10, 13:12, you know, contested the win for that race. He looked very good, but faded to 13:19. And, you know, give him a couple of years, just keep cracking that whip. He's going to be a 13-minute runner, I think, if he gets it right. And that's where it starts. But yeah, and Tom Keane, you look at Euros, we're going to have 4 men at Euros because, you know, I think you get a wild card if you're a medalist at the World Champs, and obviously Whiteman was a medalist at World Champs. So we can have 4 men at Euros. So there's going to be a spot that opens up, and, you know, you hope it goes to someone like, you know, Tom Keane or someone of that caliber, just to start to get these guys pushing through and making teams, because I do worry. As good as Whiteman, Kerr, you know, Gawley-Giles, as good as these guys are, they have taken spots every single year for the last 7-8 years. And, you know, we need that. We need that next generation coming through and being like, actually, I can go on to run 330. But if they don't make these teams, it's going to be difficult for them to develop.
Yeah, but it's just been so easy for those guys to make these teams. That's been we've never really seen them have to race each other or do anything. That's why no one's really missed out, and it is a shame because we had that year where
Haywood,
Stonier, Copeland, even like coming through, and then rather than them being the next gen, we've kind of just missed a gen.
We have. It's, you know, we got, but it's just, you know, when you talk about, I spoke to the Higgins brothers about, you talk about races and say, you know, you're 335, 336, you're just not getting the right races to go and run your 332. Even if you're in shape to talk about the golfing class as well, to put the extra step up from a professional sense that you have to make. You know, anyone running that is 332 or below is like, you know, they are full time to the hilt and back. Whereas, you know, people running 335, 336 are probably doing that trying to gain income from other sources as well. Difficult. Anyway, so men's 2000, yeah, Tom Keane wins that by the width of his vest. Was a good race though. Was a good race. A shout out to Ted Higgins, you know, for bronze. Those Higgins boys getting it done at champs. They are some of the best championship races we've seen. Men's 1500. Jack Higgins comes from way back, comes from behind to pit them all on the line. Let's sort of Fogg takes it out. Jonas challenges on the back stretch. McMurray, they all kind of run themselves out. Higgins storms through. It was a fine race. Bit of a tactical masterclass. Indoors, you can do so much damage in that last 50, 60. He did
people
that.
Think that. Yeah, they forget that there's space on that.
It's on just that people. I think that last bend, really, when you're flooded with lactic, it kills you. You know, if you come off that last bend slowly, you've got no momentum into the straight and you're just there to be shot at. And Higgins did exactly that.
Mate, impressive. You ran such a smart race, but what? I don't want to be too critical here of athletes, but like, What's Fogg thinking?
Well, look, this all stems down to wave lights and stuff as well. We can go there if you want. Wave lights.
Yeah,
in,
yeah. I mean,
wave lights in these finals. We've had some good listeners. Look, what have they said? Wave lights, to be fair, a lot of people have said not necessarily a bad thing. Wave lights should be on. They could be set at the World Q standard to give, obviously, viewers the ability to see sort of what pace they're running, you know, and compare what pace they're running. Also, it gives the runners something to shoot at, especially if they haven't got the time on the day. It's fair, you know, for them to try and have another stab. Maybe people are arguing British Athletics owes that to the athletes, give them another opportunity to understand. So a lot of people actually were in support of what me, I'm totally against it. Just get out there and race. Like, the annoying thing is I do see what they're saying. Think about in the summer, we've got a 5,000. You know, and we've got lads who are on the cusp of the European standard. They haven't got it yet. And it's like, okay, we've got, I mean, I'll just think back to my brother Pierce and Phil Norman, et cetera, when they did the steeple and they're all going for the, you know, they were going for the standard then and they were having the, you know, they're sharing laps, et cetera. Maybe wave lights would have made a difference on that day. So I think that's
all right if that's a very like specific situation when no one in the race has the standard. Because equally, if I've made the effort right to go out to Boston and run my time early doors, and then I'm prepping like, right, well, I'm going to go win this 5K in a slow time as it is every year, and all I need to do is come top two. And then they're like, ah, do you know what? Because you lot have actually just faffed around all year running 13:20, we're going to put a wave light on for you in the final and make these champs quick. I don't think that's really on.
The only time you would allow wave lights, you're saying, is basically if no one's got a standard.
No one's got a standard, then everyone, I think it should be like a opt in, opt out. And if one person says they don't want it, then you shouldn't have it.
Which, to be fair, is what happened in the men's 1500. Yeah, it's what happens in the men's 1500. And
well, this weekend, they were going to have it for Kerr, weren't they? And then because Kerr wasn't there, they all said, no, we don't want it.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Higgins brothers about this, and they said actually there was no discussion of wave lights the whole time they were there in the 3K and the 1500. So I was just listening to the commentary, and on commentary, they were saying that the athletes decide if they want wave lights in the final or not. But
the Higgins brothers, is that a vote or is that a... Because you see what I mean? Like,
talking to the athletes, there was no talk of wave lights. There was just like a few rumors flying around.
That's what I'm saying. But if they're saying they're asking the athletes, I feel like if one athlete says they don't want it, then they shouldn't have it, because it could be like, well, only one athlete's got the stand.
I agree. It's just
so we all obviously want the wave lights, but that one athlete's probably thinking, well, why would I want wave lights?
Yeah. It's just a terrible idea. You know, where does it stop? Wave lights, then literally.
Pacers in finals.
That's it. Where does it stop? Where does it stop? And then you've just got a British champs, which, you know, the win becomes even more meaningless.
Yeah.
Goodness. Anyway, we better focus on some more of these results. Ben Patterson dominated. I mean, Boffey and Patterson dominated. Yeah, fair play. Well done to them. It was good to see Patterson die. But Patterson, for me, closed out the last 200 very impressively. I think he was 26-2, 26-1 that last 200.
Always in control as well.
Yeah, but again, for me, that's what he has to do at Worlds. You know, you think indoors, you've got to get a good position and you've got to be able to lift your last 200. So, you know, it doesn't matter if it slows mid-race. It probably will in a tactical 800, but you've got to be able to run, you know, arguably he's probably got to be able to run closer to 25 for that last 200 if he's going to, you know, hold men off of that caliber at World Indoors. But it was impressive and I guess a good start for his World Indoor campaign. Molly Hudson in the women's 1500. I mean, Gemma Reekie, I can't believe they let that go so slow with Gemma Reekie in the field. That was,
yeah.
I mean, Walcott Nolan just
426 for the win.
Seems to get it wrong every time. You know, I great athlete. But in finals, I mean, why would you let it go so slow, knowing that Reekie is by far and away streaks ahead of all those girls over 800 meters?
Yeah. You know? And then, obviously, like you say, gets run out of it by Molly Hudson as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. Tough. Tough for her to take. Mate, should we talk on the fixture clashes, good or bad for the sport? Because I mean, this week, this is like, we had the Monaco. I mean, what's a shame is when you've got British champs and people are choosing to, you know, it's not like they just don't want to do British champs. They're not healthy or they're not fit. But actually,
well, even just, the way we have Bucks indoors, right? Because that's something
they'd rather race elsewhere.
That's something we can control. Like, we can't control when the road races around the world are on, right? But
what I'm saying is, like, where did Laura Muir and stuff run over 5K on the road? I thought it was a road, you know, you've gone all the way to Monaco to run 15:12, Carey Hughes 15:42, Izzy Fry 15:17. Good times, but in this day and age, but why, you know, you could have got stuck into a 3000.
Oh, you know, I agree.
We could have had a good old dust up, completely don't get it, but they will. And maybe they want to get their qualifying time for the World Road Running Championships, which for the women over 5K, 15:25. So to be fair, Laura Muir and Izzy Fry ticked that off. I feel like more people are going for this World Road Running Championships than they are the Europeans. It's all anyone's. I mean, we'll talk about the half. Sam Harrison, 68:58, very good. Jess Judd, 70 minutes. Louise Small, 70. Some very good. Clara Evans, good marathon, 2:27. And then we had a whole host of men. Look, Zach Mohammed, 60:46. Momo's back, 9. Good shape for him. Wickfield, 61:19. 61:30, by the way, is Europeans. The world road running standard, sorry. Butchie, 61:45. Jake Smith, 61:50. That Bath half is going to be exhilarating. There's going to be so many people vying for that. Those world road running spots. It's going to make Bath half very exciting. And it would be more exciting if they were just like top three, off you go.
Yeah, and Wickfield in his new Nike kit.
His new Nike, mate, him and Charik. Big. Big. Congrats to them. Yeah. Jeez.
But mate, what I was going to say was, in terms of like the British champs, like I was just having a quick look over who's actually on the latest funding list and things like that as well. And that's where you've got to be like, if you're on
funding. We've always said, if you're on funding, turn up, sell tickets. Yep. Who's on this list?
That's part of your job. That is part of your job, is to be there.
Who's on the list?
So obviously there's a load of road runners on here as well. So, but Bergen, Emil, but obviously that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Keeley, Georgia Bell, Kerr, yep. Laura Muir, yep. Patterson, Riki, Whiteman. And then that's the like top one. And then a potential one, we got Gourley, Megan Keith, George Mills, Hannah Nuttall.
To be
Amy
fair,
Pratt,
a lot of these have turned up.
Mark Scott, Elise Thorner. And then on the third tier, Paddy Deaver, Phoebe Gill, Kelly Thackeray, Mohammed.
A lot of road.
Jess Judd and Reve. But there's still a fair few athletes on there.
To be fair, a lot of those did turn up. Those who didn't, Josh Kerr, George Bell, you know, they had small injury concerns. We'll take their word for that. So, yeah. But no, I do agree. Like, if you're on funding, it is something that you should be going and doing, you know, total line at the British Championships. Jesus, we had Armar. What do you make of all these fixes? Is it a good thing, mate? Or are you finding it near? I think maybe I overthink the clash of fixtures because I'm like,
well, I get, we're in a difficult situation, is that we obviously try and plan what to talk about, and you're thinking, it's crazy, there's so many. But at the same time, maybe people like that about the sport, because if you're not that interested in indoor, for example, there's a load of road races you can catch up on. Or do you know what? It's really good for the athletes, in a sense that, say, you want to plan your season around peaking at one time in the summer, there's always a race. You're not working around a fixture list to like plan your season out. You're almost like, okay,
if
I want to run quick in March, then I need to do a road 5K, say, in this weekend in February. And there normally is a pretty decent one somewhere. They can do that. But I think it's not good in the sense that it like discourages actual racing and actual competition. It's all about just picking and choosing where's the best physical prep for them. They're not thinking, well, I need to be ready for this day and this time, so I have to build my season around being ready to race on those days. And then the only one they do that for is the British champs. And then that's why we see a lot of them mess it up, because they're not even practiced that at all.
Yeah, it's good for the athletes. I think it's bad for the fans. You talk about, if they don't like indoors, they can enjoy some road races and stuff like that. But
there's no streams anyway, to be fair. So it's not like they can even watch it, really.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I think I think it's a shame that we have to, you know, we're here discussing, like, what do you pay attention to? Because so much happened over this weekend. Are we saying that X result is better than another result? Like, you know, what one do you get most excited about? I mean, Jesus, we haven't even talked about Carl Hocker's 3:45, you know, how good he looked in house 1:44:0. over 800. We haven't even discussed these because there's just like so much has happened. And as a fan, I think that is a shame. Like you can't sit back and enjoy these performances because it's just another one being slammed your way from everywhere.
Which is why you should all commit to the British champs, because then we can just enjoy what should be like the premier competition from the weekend. Which is a championship. It's like who's the best in Britain. But I think
I've always said, you know, when you look at selling, when BA look at selling tickets, better the field, the easier it is going to sell tickets. You know, the more on the line, the more they'll sell tickets. And so, you know, they're shooting themselves in the foot. It looked pretty for all the ticket concerns, it looked pretty reasonably full actually. So on the weekend. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, mate, we've got a caller on the line. Joe Monk wants to talk about the lack of depth at the British champs. So let's hear what he has to say. Joe, how are you, first of all?
I'm good, guys. How are you? Glad to be on.
Yeah, all good.
This is from day one, so yeah, it's good to be on.
Appreciate that, Joe.
Yeah, I think before watching the British champs, I had quite a low expectation of it, just with hearing about the lack of depth that was going to be in it. Obviously, there was speculation that a lot, not many were going to be in the 1500 metres, for example, in the men's. But from watching it at the weekend, I thought it was a lot better than what I'd say what I thought it was going to be. That's just from a racing standpoint. I think when you're looking at the guys that are winning, I mean, I know we got Jack Higgins who won the 1500, and you know he's a quality athlete in his own right. But I think when you're looking at it, we should be having the Kerrs, the Whitemans, the Gawleys. You know, they are sort of at a different level compared to those kind of athletes that were in the final. And it's been when you look at like the American Championships and things like that, you'll have Cole Hocker turning out, Grant Fisher, athletes of that nature. It's sort of more of an incentive for that they have to turn up to the championships. And I don't think we British athletics place that incentive on the athletes for giving exemptions not to turn up, medical exemptions, things like that. And kind of disillusioning. I'm kind of glad I didn't go, to be honest, to go and watch it. I think one of the main things was obviously Keely pulling out a national record. That was good to see. But again, not contesting the final. I'm quite surprised about that. And then Georgia Hunter-Bell pulling out at the last minute to prioritise other racing plans sort of later on in the indoor season. I'm just thinking, well, when are athletes ever going to fit the British Championships into the programme? You know, an athlete's career isn't really long in the grand scheme of things. And you'd want to rack up as many British titles as possible, or, you know, compete at as many championships. Just from my personal opinion, if I was ever in that position.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, why do you think that is? Why do you think athletes don't see the value in competing at the British champs compared to maybe other nations?
I do think social media's got a lot to do with it. And at the end of the day, it's all about athletes need to make money. There's not a lot of money in the sport. I don't know what goes on with contracts, with athletes' contracts, but if you turn it to a championship, so I imagine they're not going to be getting any money from doing that. Maybe just from the brands just to turn up and perform. I mean, Keely would have got something probably for getting a national record, but when you've got the likes of like going to America to compete to get times, which ultimately getting the times gets you into better races, and then that equals more money, I can sort of see it from that perspective. So taking that into account with social media and wanting to sort of get quick times, I think that does detract away from doing like the championships, where you're ultimately probably just not going to get anything from it.
Joe, I agree with that in many ways. And I feel like social media has exposed us to it. All these races around the world are being sold to us constantly on social media. And I can only imagine if you're an elite, you know, we were just talking about Laura Muir and co doing the Monaco 5K on the same day as the British Champs 3K final. And I guess I've got nothing wrong with that. But if you're an elite, Laura Muir's sitting there and she's like, to be fair, she's done her hard yards. She's won so many British titles. She's turned up every year. She's, you know, destroyed the field. And maybe I want to go do something fun. I want to go to Monaco. I want to run a good 5K. And I think there is so much choice out there. And, you know, I think that leads into social media as well. We are aware of so much more that is going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think Laura Muir as well, like she's one of my favourite athletes. Like she's been around for so long. And I think she does naturally just from taking her as an example, she probably just needs to step up to the roads now. I think when you're looking at the new sort of crop of athletes coming through, even Jim Mariki's, I think you were saying on your episode last week, Jim Mariki's probably going to have to consider going up to the 1500 metres now, just because of the standard of the athletes coming through. But you're right, there were so many races. I mean, Bucks indoors clashing with the British champs, that's like, I just don't get it. I mean, I think Lucy Armitage, who won the 800. Indoor box 800. Yeah, she put a post on Instagram saying, oh, it's been a tough decision, but I've decided to box, which I do think was the right thing. You know, I think if you are a university athlete, you've got plenty of time to do the British champs, but you haven't been making that decision. It's pretty poor in terms of the scheduling. And then obviously you've got Monaco, like you said, Matt, and then you've got some races in Spain, like the marathon, Barcelona half. It can be quite inundated with the amount of races there are out there at the minute. And it's only February. It's not even track season yet.
The Bucks one is crazy to me. And I particularly like coaching Bucks in another sport and knowing how much they like Bucks, like pause the schedule around the like international events. So like they will literally have break weeks in the Bucks league for when like GB under 23s are training, for example, or the equivalent. They would purposely do that because they know how important it is. It can't be like a clash in terms of my understanding. It's got to be people just like, they're not even raising an issue or even trying to solve that.
I mean, on that, you know, Armitage has had some great battles with Simpson. Simpson walks away with a silver medal at the British Champs. Armitage wins, obviously, Bucks. Armitage probably could have medaled at British Champs, which is a real shame.
She's, I think last season was kind of a breakthrough season for her, wasn't it? She was running the BMCA races, just really taking to the field. She's an aggressive racer. She's definitely going to be one to watch. I mean, she already is now, to be fair, but it is hard to see when athletes are put in that position, which one do they prioritize? Because it goes back to the point, you know, you're not an athlete for a long time in the grand scheme of things at that level. So decisions do have to be made, but I think with the fixture clashes, it's only going to get worse as track season approaches. And you know, ultimately, athletes are just going to prioritise where the quick times are and where the prize money is. Because I think a good example with the GB sort of competing at champs, getting a GB best or running times was, I think Scott Beattie, didn't he prioritise Valencia over the World Cross Country champs? Yeah. And I mean, personally, I can't get my head around that. Obviously, there's probably more to it, but I just can't believe you'd send a GB best down over OK, but some of those are maybe in that position.
We speak for a place because we've never had a GB vest before.
That's it. Yeah. A few and far between, but it's interesting, but it's like, you know, there's not a lot of priority anymore, I don't think.
No.
Joe, GB vest.
Great points raised. Just finally, your opinions on wave lights. Did it add to your, you clearly watched the British Championships. Did it add to your viewing experience with the wave lights out there? Or did you think these are just a waste of time?
No, it was just a waste. It just made the track a bit more like glamorous, didn't it? As soon as the race started, the lights went and then they just go off because the athletes don't even consider it. They're good in BMCs, though. I'll give them that. The wave lights are good in British Mile Club races. I just think for championship finals, they just don't serve a purpose. Like David Radisha, like Cole Hocker in the Olympic final last year, it's proven that you don't need wave lights to run Olympic records, world records. So, yeah, it's pretty redundant.
Yeah. Love it. There you go. Thanks so much, Joe, for coming on. And thank you for being a loyal listener. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Good points from Joe there, to be fair. I think the lack of incentive is something that's something we need to overcome in our sport. You know, and how is the million-dollar question, really? How do you incentivize British Championships?
Like, it's sad, but I think because the shine and the lure of being a British champion clearly has lost his value. So,
you know, because yeah, to be fair, you know, even in the selection policy, British athletics have started to put in a little bit. You know, you need to turn up, etc. You need to compete at the champs in order to be considered. So they are weaving that into the selection policy. But I think, you know, there's just so many workarounds.
Yeah.
That, you know, the incentive isn't there, but also is the incentive there for those on the periphery, you know, those who are, you know,
it used to be a massive thing to like get your British champs qualifying time. I know we're like quite far removed from that. So maybe that is still a thing, but this goes back to the Bucks thing. I remember when we were at uni, a lot of like decent athletes would go into the season thinking, okay, my aim is maybe to make a Bucks indoor final and to qualify for British champs on time. Yeah. So I can contest the heat.
Yeah.
And I think the importance that those athletes actually play in the champs in terms of making the fields ensure we need heats, for example, and actually have a full start line is really been overlooked and actually encouraging those sorts of people to do it. But you look at similar with outdoors, you look at...
To be fair, though, this is I'll butt in because this is the problem. Those people are getting invited. And this is what I talk about, the incentive for those in the middle ground. because how can you have 70, you know, we shouldn't just be looking at the top people not turning up or not taking chances.
Yeah, that's
seriously.
What I mean.
For
yeah.
me, it's mostly the middle ground is not, are not bumping out the field. There seems to be, and I, like I said, I would love to hear from athletes who got an invite and in, and obviously turned it down, didn't want to contest British champs. What yeah. are their, what is their reasoning? Because when you look at Molly Hudson, Emily Simpson, these people have gone there and they've got medals. The Higgins boy, you know, they've gone there and they've won and they've, you know, they've got that on their CV. That is a huge achievement. Right. So there is opportunity, but you know, people clearly aren't backing themselves and they're clearly just like, well, you know, what's the point? I might get bumped out in the heats or you know, I might come eighth in the final. And there is a reason they're not doing it. And yeah, I find it odd. More so indoors, for sure. You know, I think, yeah. you know, we talk about this. It's National Cross next weekend, mate. You know, anyone who's serious about the cross country is doing that. You know, so right. I appreciate indoors. You are going to have less depth, but I feel it happens
it's getting
outdoors.
Worse, though, yeah.
It happens like, outdoors as well.
It's getting worse. Yeah. But you think about like the cost of actually attending these championships as an athlete is pretty high. Like you talk about, oh, well, there's all these races abroad where people are wanting to, like, it looks all shiny, social media promoting it. You can go and, I can't remember, we obviously went to Valencia a couple of years ago. Because we made that video on how much it does cost to go to Valencia. And I can't even remember how much it was, but it's not a lot.
Mate, I think it was 250 quid.
Got it, 250 quid, right? And I think we, like, priced up food as well and things like that, okay? So probably cost you that to go and race in Birmingham. If you have to go and get a hotel, and you've traveled from decent amount.
Well, if you go anywhere near it, if you go anywhere near a train station, you're dropping 100 yeah. quid these days.
And because for a lot of athletes, if you live like yeah more than maybe 4 hours away from Birmingham, you're probably staying the night before. If you're backing yourself to make the final, actually, you have to then go done really well, made the final. Here's another 100 quid for my hotel room now, and that's expensive.
Yeah, but it's, mate, they fucking, you know, athletes will spend 200 quid on shoes, so it's
no. But what I'm saying is, why would you do that? And when you're going to come anyway, if you could go and run Valencia instead. Right. I think that's what people are starting to realise. They're starting to think, why would I do that when actually I'm not going to win a medal, but I could go abroad, have a really nice experience, like see a new city, probably run a quick time with my mates, get on the beers afterwards. Like that is so much more appealing.
Yeah, agreed. I think, you know, Bucks clashing takes away a lot of the, you know, we're talking about that middle ground as well, I think, but they're all at Bucks, you know, all those people, you know, in the 800 who can run, you know, 148 to 150, they're at Bucks, and, you know, the same in the 1500 if you're 345-ish, you know, they're all at Bucks, and they're the people who are going to be contesting the heat. So I think that was a big cock up. People did message in, why wasn't British champs next weekend? Yeah, it's clashed with the National Cross before, and I think if British champs is going to clash with anything, it's not great it clashes with anything. Like, it should be on its own weekend for sure. But if it is going to clash, maybe National Cross weekend isn't the worst thing in the world. Because you've got the 800 and 1500. Those runners don't get near cross country anyway.
Even
so you've only got
the 3K guys, mate. If you're running
the 3K guys don't. Yeah, yeah.
It might be someone who runs Liverpool, right? And then runs a 3K indoors. But the likelihood of you wanting to do a 12K cross that doesn't qualify for anything versus a 3K indoors is slim come February, I think. The only thing you're doing is like, say like your team want you to do it and you're a 3K guy, but you might be there like sixth scorer. We might miss out on that, but I think, yeah.
Yep.
I'd rather clash with that than, yeah, like you say, the Bucks indoors.
Yeah, I agree. So one other thing we've got to talk about before we get the next call on the line just quickly is Highgate has been cancelled for another year, which is a big shame. British Athletics have put out a statement to say that there will be a 10,000, but you don't have to turn up. And to be fair, I think they realise that, you know, if you are going for a legitimate qualifying standard, you've got one attempt, two attempts max over 10K. So if you can basically, I think BA have said, if you can find a better race elsewhere, then crack on.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, so then it begs the question, BA, should you just save some money? Because how many people are going to enter your 10,000? There were very few. I mean, like, remember last year we went to it and there was a field of eight, or maybe a bit more than eight, but maybe eight finishers. Mm. I mean, there's quite a few DNFs, but it was there was a B race as well, wasn't there, to be fair. But just thinking in the A race, yeah, we had some good races, like Emil and on the women's side, two Italians and Megan Keith. They had a good battle, but yeah, it begs the question. Chances are, if you can qualify for Euros, you can also qualify for Commies. So that's 2 10,000 finals right there.
Yeah. Do you know what worries me, mate? I think the longer they go just means it's not coming back.
Well, Highgate, they say it is. They say it is coming back.
I know they do, but I think when you're pushing it again, I'm like, it's just going to be harder to put it on after years off, I think.
What's the issues? I know what the issues is. You know, you're relying a lot of people to come together and help organize and help get this event off the ground. You're relying on sponsors. You're relying on the backing, obviously.
And they're now missing the government body
as well. So, do you know what? I actually don't see it as a problem. I think it's got such stature and it holds such a place in the calendar that whenever Highgate decide to come back, everyone's there, you know, and it's almost like people are chomping at the bit, like, Jesus, when Highgate's back, there's going to be a big party. Like, this thing could pop off even more so than it already does.
Hey, make it an Olympics every 4 years.
Yeah, so
Olympic 10K trials and that's it, yeah.
That's a good point. So I don't see it as a problem that it's having another year off. It's more just a shame for the athletes.
I think it's more me being, like, worried. I'm like a bit like, shit, that just... You just want to see it back and you want to see it every year. And yeah,
it'll be a funding, you know, I presume it'll be a funding problem. And you wonder how people aren't like throwing cash at this event. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the best event. It's the best event in the sport, arguably.
That's part of my issue though, is I'm like, say you're a company that isn't like in the sport or really knows the sport. You're now thinking they're trying to say, oh yeah, sponsor this. We lasted it 4 years ago. I promise it's really good. Rather than year on year, you're like, okay, now I'm getting a return for my investment because I'm going to sign for the next five events with you for the next 5 years. But they're thinking, well, might not actually go ahead. So who knows or whatever. It's not great in that sense. Anyway, we've got another guest on the line right now.
Yeah, so Ian Will joining us again to talk about the lack of depth at the British Indoor Championships. Ian, how are you, first of all, mate?
Morning, guys. Yeah, very well.
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate.
We are very well. Look, Ian, you watched the championships. I know you've sent in some good comments regarding the championships as well. But initially, what did you make of it?
I think there are some very exciting races overall when we look at the weekend over the 2 days. It is nice to have it over the 2 days and not condensed, even with the amount of invitations that went out versus the start lists. It was still nice to have that over the 2 days. Some very exciting stuff, but also it's hard to ignore the fact that some key names are missing, or we have medical exemptions, or we have people just running heats. So I think it doesn't necessarily show the entirety of the strength of field for the British champs and what we have as a caliber of athlete. As good as that was, taking that away from nobody else, I do think it offers an opportunity for some of the up-and-coming athletes or lesser-known names to really stake a claim for a selection.
Ian, I'll ask, you're embedded into the club system and you are at the heart of our sport. People at your club, Lincoln and Wellington, are they aspiring to go to the British Championships? Are they getting excited about the opportunity to potentially qualify for this? How do they view the championships? Or is it something they're like, oh, well, you know, I never do that. That's for a different type of person.
Well, it's a great question. I think when you get that invitation, if it was someone like me, if I was at the level that some of our guys are, I'd be extremely honoured and privileged to be going there. But there's so many meets, so many events, so much, I guess, opportunity elsewhere nowadays where, you know, as an athlete, we all know that a nice bit of prize money or pay packet elsewhere might lure someone to a European stage. It may even be if they're looking at that start list and knowing that some of their closest competition are running elsewhere, and maybe they decide to do the same as well. We had a number of invites and some of our club at Lincoln Wellington did compete. We had three athletes in the end competing and a couple who were invited who declined. And famously, there's an athlete for us who gets talked about who runs in America a lot and breaks a fair few British records, but doesn't often run in the UK in Sam Atkins. So there's a few names who may not always run, whether it's still got the same appeals it used to or not. I think you may have to ask some of those later down the line. But for me, something is pulling some of these bigger names to other meets and other circuits, whatever that may be.
Yeah. So within the club system, British champs isn't, there are other things that athletes are getting excited about at a club level.
I do think so, yeah. Which is I guess I'm looking positively on this. Isn't always the worst thing if we are seeing other names coming through. I think one of the most exciting races for me was seeing the 400 and hearing the commentary team talking about, you know, Branning finishing third, the British champs.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Gives a great opportunity for two other athletes, and Louisa Stoney's worked hard over the years, and great to see people like that, you know, medaling and podium finishing. So it, I guess on one hand, we could talk about some of our more elite or top level athletes not turning up, or even sometimes being raced out of something and seeing someone else shine. So maybe there's some positives to take from it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Ian, we've got Mabel in the lobby, I believe, from your club. Yeah, welcome to the podcast. We're just chatting about, I guess, about the lack of a lot of athletes choosing to contest the British champs. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. I think quite a lot of this is a personal like thing, I think, between athlete coaches, their whole support system. So I feel outwards from somebody who's maybe not inside of their like support system, it may look like, you know, they're downplaying the impact of British champs, or they're not supporting British champs. But sometimes it can be with many opinions, many factors that come into play. That's the reason some athletes aren't able to or don't compete at British champs.
Mabel, that's an interesting take, because British champs is probably the one competition a year that athletes will be scrutinised a lot more so than any other competition they may choose to do around the country or around Europe.
Yeah, obviously it's a massive championship. I mean, it's in home ground. It's with an incredible crowd. At times, like even for myself as well, like previously I've been told not to compete in British champs because of other competitions coming up, such as Europeans. And I understand that, obviously, the different scale, but it's sometimes crazy. It's in the interest of the athlete themselves. So the athlete may be dealing with, I don't know, a specific niggle that they don't want to be said out loud, or then they have a specific task or specific goal. And sometimes British champs, unfortunately, it just falls sometimes in the wrong place in the calendar, or sometimes it can fall personally not at the right time.
Sure. With that though, would you not argue that there's an element that British champs is the calendar, or should be the calendar, for the top athletes in the UK, and that athletes should be then adjusting what they do around that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, speaking for myself as well, British champs is one of the things we put down the calendar before any other open meet or any other world tour that comes up, indoor, outdoor. But at times, like I said, sometimes it falls in the wrong place. For example, an athlete could pick up a niggle 2 weeks before, and British champs just falls in that window of recovery. So the athlete may no longer compete. But then after that, let's say, for example, somebody who's at the top of the elite might have, let's say, a diamond league there. And at the end of the day, it is all about, as much as it's about, you know, showing up for the crowd and showing up for the home country, sometimes it's also about the livelihood of the athlete as well. You know, they know that if they go to the Diamond League, they're gonna recover from that niggle. So they'll look at big competitions after that, such as, I don't know, qualifying for Worlds, for example. But then they'd also think, okay, I'm also making in an earning as well. So that kind of like, it plays, different factors plays, but sometimes they can be like, okay, I'll just, you know, just British champs isn't where I need to be at the moment. And sometimes it can come off a bit like they're downplaying British champs, but sometimes it can be like that.
So in short, there's a lack of incentive in the most part to go to British champs and compete.
You could say that, but I don't want to obviously downplay. Like, I absolutely love British champs. Like, if I'm at the opportunity, when I see that invitation come through, I'm jumping with joy. Let everybody know that I've got my invitation. Right. Invitation, but you could say there's a lack of incentive. But I think now, with obviously the new partnership with, is it Nova? Nova. There's obviously Navuna. I know before previous years when we had the lack of like sponsorship and partnerships, but now we've got that. I think that's a lot more incentive now for people to obviously compete at British champs and put that as one of the main things in their calendars as well.
Why would that partnership motivate athletes to compete there more? Is there prize money?
I mean, if you look at, obviously, we have the performance of the days, if you see that, which is a great incentive for not even the elite, but also people who are national level or even club level, like who get invited to British champs. Like, despite the fact that it is British champs and it's something that every athlete has, like, is in the back of their mind, it's also like a good way of like, okay, like I'm going to be rewarded for like, even though like it's a reward as well, being there and having your family and friends see you at such a big stage, but having that like little thing, it's like, oh, like it's recognizing the, from the smallest athletes, the biggest athletes, the performances they do throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
For someone like yourself, Ian, is having athletes from your club, like Mabel, competing at the British Champs, is that one of the reasons that you tune in as well?
From my perspective, as a fan of the sport in general, yeah, it's great to see household names and you know, world-level athletes going and showcasing something on as Mabel said, on a national stage and in our home country. But certainly it gives an extra level of spice and pride, I think, when we're looking for our club jersey. You know, it's nice to see that, you know, if you know, someone like Mabel could wear GB vest or whatever, but it's lovely to see you in a Lincoln Wellington vest and you're spotting those people, you're picking them out of the crowd. You know, it was great last year seeing Josh Kerr talking about Edinburgh AC. And, you know, it gives a little bit of context to where these guys have maybe come from to get to where they are. They're all representing their club as much as they are themselves. So I think for me personally as a fan, and as an athlete, it's wonderful to see that for sure. So great to see our three guys at the weekend do so well. And just picking up on what you said before, Mabel, as well, I think it's an interesting point on if an athlete does carry a little bit of a niggle and they're talking about the credibility of the champs and medical exemptions. It is, I guess you could say, it's slightly unfair to make somebody run injured and fall or risk someone's career further if there is another bigger A race in the calendar. So it's just an interesting point on what you said before. But yeah, for sure, I think for me, it absolutely helps me to tune in, being able to see that. Yeah,
it's great to get an athlete's perspective from Mabel there.
100%.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you both so much for jumping on. I wish we had more time, but we've got to start wrapping up.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Cheers, guys. See ya.
Thanks, both. Right.
There you have it. So Ian Will there of Lincoln Wellington and Mabel Akande as well of Lincoln Wellington too, British sprinter. So yeah, nice to get an athlete's perspective, and that's probably the first sprinter we've actually had technically on the podcast as well, mate.
I think it is. No, interesting points. It's nice to hear about the impact of it can have on the club as well. You know, club development. I think the British Champs is the one place we overlook that a lot. You know, athletes are in club colours. And the impact that can have on juniors and others within the club, and it should be celebrated. It makes the club a lot more attractive. You know, the success of your seniors makes the club a lot more attractive for the next generation and those coming, you know, those developing and coming through. So there are big bonuses, and they're not just, I guess, you know, financial or media attention. I think there's perks to competing at British Champs beyond your own career. It's what you can do to inspire the next generation as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad that was raised, because I think that's something that we think is important, but from the outside looking in, sometimes maybe we presume that is gone. But clearly in Mabel's case, it's still there. And I think, yeah, the shame is it's the same the same athletes getting niggles consistently every year in and around the same weekend. Is what annoys us, rather than it kind of just being unlucky.
Well, we've probably slammed BA enough on this podcast. We should maybe give it a rest for a week.
Yes, we certainly have, mate. You bang on. So it might be a great time to get the Higgins brothers on now. Matt sat down with Jack and Ted Higgins last night. Enjoy.
Right, here we go. Finally got the Higgins boys on after some technical issues. But lads, it's been a big 24 hours for you. I mean, British Champs couldn't have gone much better. Do you want to talk us through it? I mean, Jack came home with a gold. Do you want to start first? Second gold at British Champs, actually. So how was the weekend for you?
Yeah, I'd say, really good weekend overall. I was over the moon with it. Obviously, stepped up to the 15 this year. Something me and Mark discussed. Just really wanted to keep fitness high over this sort of indoor season, sort of train through the indoors. And then the aim is to really drop down and attack the 800s for outdoors. But yeah, like obviously knew I was in good shape going into it. In my head, I was like, if I can sort of be in touching distance with, well, the three that were in the race, to be honest, was who I had my eyes on and sort of knew I had to look out for. I was like, if I can be in touching distance with them in the last 100, then I knew I could sort of back myself to finish that strong. But to actually do it is something else, and sort of shocked myself a bit, but over the moon a bit, to be honest.
You're making a habit of slingshotting off that last turn. I mean, you actually, have you watched it back? You were quite far back. Did you feel as far back as you were in the race?
I think going through the bell lap, I felt myself off a little bit, like 1 or 2 meters. And then, the last bend's about 100 to go. I could see Jonas and McMurray ahead of Fogg. And I'm like, usually I would have waited till like the home straight, but I'm like, It sounds weird to say I went a bit earlier than I would have liked to, because it was only 100 meters to go then. But I was like, if I don't go now, I just won't catch them at all. So yeah. I sort of had to make the move. And then I was literally in lane two all the way on that last bend. But yeah, it worked out all right. And then I still had this sort of extra bit to slingshot off. But yeah, like my mum and dad and my girlfriend in the stands, that they say I give them a heart attack every time going off that last bend. But yeah.
Was securing the race, did you feel in control? 200 to go, did you feel in control? Were you like, okay, I've got enough to get this, but you were just letting them, you know, battle each other and wear themselves down?
Yeah, I think it was at 300 to go, James Murray came past me, and it was just a case of sort of staying patient. I knew if I was to react then, I'd probably do my, like, use my only move left in the race. So it was just a case of, like, being confident that I'm comfortable where I am and just, yeah, like, backing my kick. But at no point did I feel like I'm not in this race. I knew I was in the race the whole time on that last lap.
Mate, where's that instinct come from? Because that's serious sort of racecraft intuition in the moment.
Yeah.
There's something. You boys have looked like you've always had that, to be fair, ever since you sort of burst onto the scene. I remember when you beat Guy Limoff a couple of years back. And ever since then, you know, the both of you have always seemed like you've had that racecraft and something that comes quite naturally.
Yeah, I mean, we both like racing quite a bit. Obviously, you get some athletes that only target the, like, really big champs or, like, just go for, like, the fast races. But I think for us, it's something we enjoy racing, and obviously it's something to look forward to. Like, for example, like in the winter, like when it's really long training sessions in the dark, I want a race to look forward to, and it keeps me motivated to keep training. So I think it's just racing a lot, and obviously training as well with Ted. Obviously last sort of few reps, it is almost like battling then, I suppose. So I think that definitely helps the situation. Yeah,
Ted, do you back that up? Last couple of reps are a bit of a race.
Yeah, they can get a bit tasty at times. No, it's all good competition, I suppose, really. We're never killing ourselves in sessions to one up the other. I just think it's healthy competition, and in training, that's sort of what you need. You need that. Yeah. It helps having someone sort of matching you in ability, just being able to push you all the way to the end, especially some of them last reps when it gets a bit tough, having that person either to stick on or keep you sort of checking your shoulder definitely helps.
Is it easier that it's your twin brother? Or harder?
That's a tough question. Yeah, it'd probably be not harder. I think it's good knowing the ability that each other are at. So it's a good marker. So if you know he's on your shoulder, it's nothing to worry about. If he comes past you, you know, he's a 2-time British champ, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. So yeah, no, it's all good.
Well, you've got to talk about your 3000 as well. That's the clutch bronze that you had there. Yeah. How'd the race play out for you? Also, this is a conversation I want to have with both of you about these wave lights on commentary. Hannah was sort of saying how it was on you guys in the call room to decide whether the race went ahead with wave lights or not. Is that true? You guys obviously were out there. Did you have the decision of choosing whether you were to compete with wave lights or not?
I think you might be a bit disappointed with this answer, but we didn't get asked about the wave lights at all. So I heard on the commentary, they was like, oh, does everyone have an argument of if it's a majority vote or not? Like, I was the first one to walk in the call room to be led out. I obviously went to toilet in the call room. So unless it happened within that minute while I was in the toilet, I didn't get asked any questions about wave lights. Obviously, I heard before that there might be wave lights, but yeah, no officials, no one from UK athletics asked any of us athletes in the call room, at least. I don't know about other races, but for us personally, that didn't happen.
Neither for you, Ted. When did you know there was going to be wave lights? Was it literally when the gun went?
Yeah, I think Adam Ford told me before that there would be wave lights. I think he had an inkling. But yeah, like, it was literally once the gun went off, yeah, you see them and I'm like, all right, there's wave lights, and that was it, really.
For or against, boys?
See, I'm sort of on the fence. Like, I think for championship races, it's probably not needed. I think wave lights in the championship races, it probably gives the advantage to the faster athletes. So someone like myself, who I think I'm quite I see myself as more of a championship racer than just hammering it from the gun. I think if someone's miles ahead in terms of time, it's basically just giving them the title if they decide to go with the lights. Obviously, it's at everyone's discretion whether they want to attack the race and follow the lights. But I think for champs, like it's a championship race, make it a race rather than a time trial.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you, boys. Ted, interesting move to do the 3000. Obviously, you know, considering how you've both moved so well over the 1500, you know, you've gone toe for toe and your brother's obviously a British champion over the 1500. Do you think you could have got more into 1500, you know, one up on your bronze, or do you think that was fair?
Well, we, funny enough, Mark messaged us afterwards. So after we got back from our races, obviously we was in the athletes' call room. Mark dropped a message in our little group chat, just the two of us and him. And I think he kind of agreed that we'd maybe made the right decision on the day.
Yeah.
It was a tough one for me. I think before the indoor season started, we did agree, me and Mark, that I would step up to the 3K. I did target the Southern champs to sort of chase the standard. And once I achieved that, I sort of had kind of agreed then that I would be doing a 3K indoors. Obviously, then dropped down to a few fast 15s at Sheffield. We both went to Reykjavik, raced there. And then obviously we'd done the indoor mile. So the fitness was definitely there. Coming off of, you know, some good mileage and obviously a fast 15, it was tempting to sort of maybe go back on my word and enter the 15. But I also knew that after doing Battersea 5K, putting in quite a decent 5K time there, that my 3K time wasn't quite a reflection of where I was at ability-wise. I feel like I had a strong 15 and a strong 5K. And although my 3K time might not have shown that on the start line, I probably wasn't one of the favourites, I knew I had a bit of confidence in myself that, you know, that's going to sort of do me some good, having that endurance across the 5K and then maybe a bit more faster footwork than some others in the field over the 15 and 8.
It must have given you a lot of confidence to have come away with that bronze. You know, you just look at the guys that you beat, you know, and their times on paper over 3,000. You know, they're all subs, you know, most of them sub 750 guys, or, you know, mid 330 guys, and you put them away.
Yeah, no, definitely a lot of confidence to take from that race. I wasn't sure how the race would pan out in terms of if it's going to be a tactical one or a fast affair from the gun. I think I was probably mentally prepared for a bit of both. And funny enough, it did start off quite quick. And then it sort of got a bit tactical around the midsection and then gradually wound up near the end. But yeah, I think on the start line, you look at some of the names in there, it was quite a stacked field. I know Kerr dropped out, but regardless of that, there was still some like big names in there. I wasn't thinking too much about the names on the start list. I was sort of thinking about what I'd put in training wise and knew where I was at. And I think the difference with me and Jack, I think Jack's had a few more years. Sort of his, obviously he got 800 title 2 years ago and then got silver last year. I'd done the 8 last year and didn't get out of the heat. So I think I had a bit more to prove kind of where I'm at in terms of ability. I just maybe haven't been able to reflect that in some of the races. So I think it was definitely maybe a bit of relief being able to come away with a medal, sort of knowing that I can sort of prove where I know I should be at, I guess.
Yeah, you talk about Josh Kerr dropping out. I mean, Jack, circumstances in your race changed a lot as well. You were supposed to have heats, then obviously it's a straight final. How did you boys go about planning for a race that is just always changing? Was it frustrating at any moment? Were you sort of going up there Friday thinking, fucking hell, just tell me what is going on?
Yeah, well, we booked the hotel for Friday night, so expected heats. To be fair, like when the start list came out, obviously, because I was in the 15, Ted knew was in the 3K. Obviously, we both saw that Tom Keane and McCluckey were
on both.
On both. So again, we was like, in my head, I'm like, I think they were going to do the 3K, but we weren't too sure. And then myself and Mark actually emailed the British Athletics and just said, look, is it going to be a straight final? Like, we'd rather know. It's going to affect our like week leading up to it. And then, yeah, they came back and was a straight final. I was sort of looking forward to a sort of a 15, like going through the rounds, because with the 800, like last year, it was so cutthroat. Like I had to win my heat to get through to the final, and that was it. Whereas having, was it 4 or 5 maybe in the 15 and you're through, like I think that just relieved the pressure a bit. And I was sort of looking forward to maybe just enjoying the experience more of actually racing, and hopefully like I would have been comfortably able to get through. Obviously, yeah, it ended up being a straight final, and that's just something you got to deal with. Obviously, a few names didn't turn up, but at the end of the day, it's you're racing the people that decide to turn up, and obviously, you've got to be in the race to go and win it. So, yeah, just took it from there, and yeah, made the most of it being a straight final.
Mm. Ted, similar for you in your experience with Kerr pulling out big name like that, did that change anything or not really?
Not from my point of view. Maybe Tom Keane or McCluckie, sort of maybe more of the favourites in addition to Kerr. I think for me, it was just a case of staying in contention the whole race. I knew from the start, if I can put myself in a good position, whether it be quick or if it's tactical, just to not get boxed in and sort of match any moves. I guess I kind of found myself in third or fourth for the whole race, really. And then when it sort of wound up from 600, just sort of staying in contention. So I think the plan always, regardless of who was in the race, was just to sort of be ready to try and match any moves. So in terms of Kerr not showing, I don't think that was really, didn't throw me off as much. Maybe I think it would have been great to have raced him, been in the field. It would have been interesting to see how he would have run the race and how it would have played out differently. But in terms of the guys that did race, I think it was still a great race. And yeah, I just sort of had to put myself in that position.
I've got to ask, lads, how have you developed both training and racing over the last couple of years, one around full-time work, but I feel like you two have made a very, very difficult transition, which is usually overlooked in our sport. And that is going from potentially making a British Champs final or, you know, finishing, let's say, between 6th and 15th overall British Champs, right? To medaling. Like, there is a big gap there, and it's such a difficult nut to crack, like, to go and get a medal at British Champs. I mean, Jack, you've done it 3 times now. yeah, and you almost burst onto the scene in your, you know, in your first time when you beat Liam off. But, you know, Ted, I guess you've experienced that journey a little bit more, you know, outdoors, you know, last year indoors, talk about not making it to the final, outdoors as well. That is such a difficult step to make. And how have you managed to make that successfully? Because there's a lot of people who fail. You know, they come 6th, 7th, couple of years in a row, and then they sort of decide, I'm done with turning up and coming 8th and stuff, I'm going to go chase something else.
Yeah, no, definitely. I've sort of, I think the year Jack won his 800 British Champs, I wasn't really competing. I was sort of doing a bit of training, ticking over, but I had a different setup with work, and I wasn't able to get down to any training sessions. I was only really getting home late and then just going out for easy runs, just ticking over mileage. So I was losing out on valuable speed work and key sessions that maybe Jack was doing. So it was quite hard not being able to, you know, get the time off work. And I think within last year, I actually took some time off of work. So I decided to step down from my job, and I was willing to take a couple months out just to sort of get back into some like routine of training. I mean, I probably had about just a month or two out just to sort of get some fitness back in the legs, wow. some key sessions, and then picked up a full-time job again, but better hours. It was more suited. I was able to get to my Tuesday and Friday sessions, had my weekends again. So I was able to, you know, enter some races, sort of brush off the rust and sort of just stretch the legs out. And I've been at my job now for a year, and it's just having that routine, that consistency. I think the main thing for me was just the mileage has picked up slightly. I wouldn't say we're very mileage heavy runners. I probably average around 55 to 60, which probably isn't that much in comparison to what some of the other boys are doing. But I think the main thing for me in the step that I've made is just consistency. It's been able to get down to these sessions, ticking off these sessions, do Tuesdays and Fridays. We even have a group that go down on Sundays for some drills and some sort of extra strides and speed work. And that's just all sort of been really valuable in sort of making that progression, I suppose.
Mate, what inspired you to make that transition? Obviously from your job, what inspired you to jack that in, have a bit of time off, catch up with your brother? Was it simply seeing him win British Champs indoors a few years ago? Did that sort of make you think, I should give this a crack too?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was definitely a big part in my decision. Obviously being twins and being very similar in ability. Mm-hmm. The years prior where we were racing in our previous club at Bexley, cross countries and maybe some Kent Leagues or YDLs, we were always very similar in ability. And I did miss it. I did miss the racing and the competing, and seeing him do so well, just sort of, it was, I guess, inspiring to sort of take it back up again. And I just had to make it. It was quite a tough decision, obviously, to sort of leave work for a bit. But I think that was definitely a valuable thing to do. And obviously it pays dividends that having done that has proved it was, yeah, necessary.
I mean, Jack picked up 3 British Champs medals, 2 gold. Talk about that work-life balance for yourself, because you're operating at a seriously high level.
Yeah, I mean, similar to Ted, it's all been about since I've got that 9-to-5 job. Obviously, when I won indoors in 24, that was my first year of full-time work. So I honestly think it was just down to that consistency of being able to not miss sessions and just keep it week after week, pretty much consistent. And yeah, I mean, like that first, obviously 2024 and the 800, it was such a shock. Like most guys run like super quick times and then go and win a chance. Whereas for me, it was completely the other way around. Like
yeah,
I was 149 going into that champs, PB'd in the champs. And then that season carried on to go and run my first 145 time. So yeah, that obviously is probably not the most, like, the normal way most athletes sort of come about. But again, like, then it led on to the second year. Like, there was also a European spot for grabs, and that really wasn't my main focus. Like, I just sort of wanted to compete at the champs and prove that last year wasn't a fluke. That, like, I remember going into, like, I was so nervous for the heats. I'm like, if I don't make out of the heats, like, what are people going to think? Like, see, I won it last year. Surely I need to get out of these heats. Yeah, I was just happy to make it into the final again. And I remember, like, Justin Davies told me before the final, goes, you do realise if you and me get top two, we're off to Euros. I'm like, mate, why have you told me that? Like, they've made it so much more nervous. yeah, then I remember crossing the line, obviously, again, and obviously, lap to go in that race, I was out the back. I was probably a bit more further off the other guys than I was yesterday. But when I came through and I crossed the line, Dave is like, oh, like, how'd you do? I said, well, second. He goes, oh, that's it, we're off to Euros. I'm like, I still don't believe you, because I hadn't had the standard then. And then I was looking, like, me and Mark was on the selection policy, like, constantly saying, well, this means this, and surely this means I'm going, because I've hit this point, but then I don't have the time. And it's like, anyway, then I finally got the call, and obviously that was a great experience to go to Euros. Obviously it didn't pan out how I wanted to, obviously didn't make it out of the heats. Yeah, obviously, but again, it was just more motivation. My first GB vest under the belt sort of eased the pressure a bit, and then I could sort of kick on for the outdoors. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just suited to indoors. I mean, I'm fully aware, obviously, I haven't made it outdoor final. I'm not saying like obviously I've done well indoors, but I know now I need to properly push on and make those outdoor finals. Obviously the level does step up for the outdoor season, and I'm fully aware that obviously I'm yet to do that. But I think after sort of the winter we've had, obviously we've both sort of levels above what we were last year. Mm-hmm. Obviously we look back to races like the Dream Mile at Lee Valley, like we've both done that in previous years and like died with 300 to go. And I think this year, like our last 100, we just look so much stronger than we could have imagined like last year. So I think we're both in just good spots at the minute compared to last year, and I think hopefully it should show in this coming outdoor season.
I hope so. It's been impressive what you've achieved so far. Where did you, you know, if you don't mind me asking, to put it bluntly, lads, where'd you come from? You mentioned Bexley, your old club, but you definitely felt like you burst on the scene. I hadn't heard of you. Maybe I wasn't following you through the age groups, but yeah, I think even Mark admits that you kind of have just blossomed in the last 2 or 3 years. You know, you talk about that 149 to 145 progression in 6 months, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think, yeah, so we first club was Bexley Athletics Club. We were there for, how old were we when we joined there? Probably
year 10,
yeah. And we were there for a good couple of years. Always enjoyed racing then, competing for the club. We was only really domestic races, so local Kent Leagues, YDLs at the time, the occasional Southerns, we'd make an appearance. But we'd never really, yeah, compete at a level higher than that, to be honest. And it wasn't to say we wasn't taking the running seriously. We did enjoy it, but I guess, yeah, the training we were doing wasn't allowing us to excel.
Yeah, I don't think like we really took it as seriously then. Obviously, we went to our sessions. It was Tuesday and Thursday back then, but we were a bit lazy with it, I suppose, at that point. And it's probably a bit critical to like look back on that now, but we weren't really doing like the long runs in between sessions. I think we were playing football at the time when we first started running, but obviously we quickly stopped football and decided, oh, we prefer running a bit more, it's more enjoyable, and it was more of a social side going down to Bexley. And then, yeah, just sort of blossomed from there, really. And then I think I'd done at English schools in, I think it was 2019, and I got second. I was like leading, first time I've ever led at 200 to go, and had about 10 metres on the field. And then coming down that home straight, I just had windmill arms, and I think it was Dan Joyce Durham overtook me about 50 meters out, and I literally fell across the line, but got second. Obviously, back then in English schools, that's top two is your English, your SIAB vest. Obviously, got my first England vest, and then I think later that year I got it was World Schools Champs in Croatia, so got my second England sort of team. But then even after that, it sort of went back to normal, just racing for Bexley, cross country, and sort of local league meets, and that's sort of where it stayed for quite a while, to be honest. And yeah,
that's weird. As after that success at English schools, you would almost imagine that your career kicks on from there, and not go the other way, not go back, go back to normal and sort of big fish, small pond scenario. When after those results at English schools, did you not? Why didn't it sort of progress? Why weren't you hungry to sort of go, look, there's a Euro Youths the next year or something like that? Because you must have been of that level.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm completely honest, back then, I had no clue about Europeans and all these big champs. And I don't know if it just was our setup then, but we weren't really sort of familiar. Obviously, we knew about racing and nationals and stuff, but I never really put two and two together that it goes further. I remember we first started off as mainly cross country runners for Bexley, and we'd done the nationals at for Bexley, and I think then someone mentioned nationals at track, and I'm like, how do you get 100 people running around? it just didn't go through my mind that obviously there's heats and you have to have standards to enter, and I think we just didn't really know much about the sport at that time. And then obviously then times obviously got a bit quicker, and then obviously we decided to, our old coach Denise Peeney, she was our second mum at the time, but she actually came to us and was like, boys, I think I've got you as far as I can, I think it's time we look for a new coach. So she was honest enough to say I think I've got you as far as I can. And that's when we contacted Matt Yates and joined the Run Yard for a bit. But even then, we were both working. I was working at B&Q and had shift patterns all over the place. And it didn't quite work out in terms of getting to training. Obviously, we were with Dan Rowden at the time, and it would be Monday this time at Woodford Green. I'm I've got a shift that day. And I think we couldn't really progress that much then because still work patterns. And that's why I think from us going both full time, that's when it's really kicked on, just purely for the fact we can get that consistency in training.
Yeah, Ted, that with Matt Yates there, then what sparked the change? Basically, did you just realise that this isn't working? Matt Yates' setup was almost too professional, in the sense that it'd be 10 a.m, like you say, down at a track. That's not feasible when you're working full time. So then when did you join Mark?
Yeah, so I mean, the setup with Matt, you're completely right. It was obviously a lot of full-time international athletes, and props to them. The setup they had there was great for the level and the ability the athletes were. I think we were quite fortunate to sort of be exposed to that experience and see what it was like to train as a full-time athlete. I just don't think we was quite in the right position. Probably just, a bit of unfortunate timing in terms of how it worked out. Like Jack said, our jobs were sort of shifts all over the place. It was hard to get to sessions, and we just sort of, I think in the end, we kind of just fell off a bit in terms of not being able to commit to these sessions, and we were just picking up long runs here and there.
Yeah, I just jump in. We done I think it was a BMC at Eltham, and we both won, we both raced, I think we must cross the line pretty close. I think it was in a 151. I remember Matt saying why aren't you boys running 146? He goes, you can clearly run 146 from what I've seen in training. And we're just I don't know why. It's just not happening. And obviously, I think it was because the training, obviously, I don't know. Obviously, I think it might have been different if we were with Matt now, or purely for the sense of the consistency side. But yeah, then I think it was in 2023 we decided to join Mark, and we'd probably had a bit of time off, maybe a few months of just floating around training and doing our runs separately. And then I think, my dad contacted Mark and was like, any chance you can do something with the boys, sort of a last chance, or we need a sort of a switch up. And we went to for a trial session down at Tunbridge, and haven't looked back since. And obviously just the group atmosphere down there is just one big sort of friendly club atmosphere. I'll be working, I'm just looking forward to going to training to meet everyone and have your catch-ups and stuff. And I think yeah, obviously, I say all the time, but props to Mark for sort of the atmosphere he's created down at Tonbridge. It's such a good environment down there. And I think everyone's just sort of bouncing off each other, and all these performances everyone's putting out down at Tonbridge, it just resonates with everyone.
Honestly, and performances, talking about Tonbridge and performances, you know, the team aspect is a large part of what you guys do. We've seen you at Mansfield, we've seen you at the Road Relays. You've kind of, you know, flipped the script when it comes to this hyper periodized approach that we see in the modern day, where, you know, people don't race, you know, everything is so planned and thought out. But, you know, you guys, yeah, I mean, I remember watching videos literally just at the start of the winter, you facing off against Kingston in a Kent League, and then here you are, you know, running over 800 2000 indoors and taking medals. So how come that is such a large part of, is that something you enjoy, that side of the sport as well, and you want to always continue doing those sorts of races?
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously the team aspect is such a huge part of the club. Obviously, like Jack said, they're all your mates down there, and you can't wait to sort of get down to your next training session. So being able to compete with guys that have like similar interests in you, and it's such a supportive group. Even obviously Mark's side, we've also got Pete and Nikki who are down there helping out with the timing and coaching as well. So there's so many people that go into making a team as successful as it is. And I think being able to sort of give back and, you know, help the club sort of achieve these medals at these competitions, it's just so rewarding. We enjoy it. We enjoy racing, track, and then obviously during the winter, and you've got your road relays. It just breaks up the season. It's something to look forward to. And for us especially, I think doing the national road relays in Mansfield, that probably helped us or put us in a good position for indoors, because we were training more for a bit of cross, I suppose. Got a bit more of an endurance base ready to then attack the track. So I think we was up in the mileage just to make sure we were fit enough to, you know, contend at these Mansfield and these road relays. And then we've just been able to sort of sharpen off of that strength that we've developed through the winter. And it's just, yeah, been so beneficial for us to then drop back down to an indoor season where clearly we're a lot stronger than we were last year.
It's been impressive how you have been able to kind of do it all on all surfaces. That's a difficult thing. There's very few runners out there who can, you know, who can get an 800 gold and run. What did you run at Mansfield, Jack? 1450 something?
Like, it was one of the five. I ran the same 1459.
Yeah. I just scraped under 15 minutes at Mansfield, which I was quite happy about.
Yeah, mate. You know, that is, you're probably one of a kind in that realm. But talking a little bit more on races, and now you're at the level where it's becoming increasingly difficult to run these standards. You know, you have to get into the races. How are you, what's your take on the sport at the moment, the position you're at? You know, and I felt even going in, you know, we were seeing you, like you say, winning the mile at Lee Valley, and you're doing BMCs, but you weren't getting abroad. You weren't getting into these, you know, like you took down Jonas, you know, who managed to get abroad and run 3:37. You certainly weren't traveling much. I know you went to Iceland. So where's your head at with the sport? Is it quite a frustrating period for you? How do you see yourselves breaking through into these international races and running those really fast qualifying times that you need?
Yeah. I think Mark said it previously, like, I think we're sort of in a bit in the middle ground. Obviously, like, we know what we're capable of, but I guess on paper, our times aren't out of this world. So like, organizers are looking at us, and there's a guy that has run 2-3 seconds quicker, albeit maybe 3 years ago. They're going to take the guy with the faster time. And I just think, yeah, we, any opportunity that we will get, obviously we'll snatch with both hands. I think this indoor season, we tried to get a few indoors races abroad, and they sort of fell through. And the one in Iceland, so we just came about, Vinny Magnusson just messaged me out of the blue saying, oh, I've got this race, I'm going to target 3:38. And we thought, well, if it's going to be hopefully a fast time, we'll snatch that opportunity. And obviously went there. Obviously, it was a good event, but yeah, it just didn't pan out the way we wanted. The pacemaker ran the 800 like 40 minutes before our race and said in the call room, oh, I'm only going to take you to 600. And it's like, and we were just like, okay. And Ted just looked at me as like, well, you know what's going to happen. We're just going to have to take it on. And so I think we've been a bit unfortunate, but I think we obviously aim to get abroad. And I think now we've sort of had a bit of a switch up in our setup. Obviously, we're in the process of changing agents, just having to compete something different. And hopefully that can put us in some better positions going forward. But it's definitely something we're trying to get into more often. And we both understand, like, at the end of the day, people look at times on paper. They don't necessarily win you championships, but you do need the times as well.
You need the times to get there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. Do you wish that a bronze medal in the 3000 at the British Champs or a gold over the 1500, 800, etc. Do you wish that carried more weighting to your name? Like, you know, meet organizers should look at that and they should go, these guys are British medalists. They can get in this field, no problem.
I think, obviously, I'd like to think it does carry some weight in. But then, like, you think if organizers are putting events on purely to say they've run fast times, and if you don't have those times, they're going to look at you and think, I don't know if this guy can run at this time. Whereas if someone also is going for the same lane that I'm going for and they have run faster, I can see why they're going to pick them over myself if they have got a faster time. So I can see it, but you'd like to think if you've got medals to your name, it shows you can race. And if it is a fast race, you can use that race in mind and sort of put yourself in the good positions. But again, like, you don't really know what these organizers are after all the time, so it does vary, I suppose.
I mean, boys, so we'll just finish up plans for the summer. I think you're both in a fantastic position. You look at LA 2028, is that something that you can now, you know, take quite seriously if you weren't already?
So I suppose it is. It's something, obviously, see, everyone's dream is to compete at the Olympics. It's probably something we've not really considered in previous years, but I guess saying it out loud, it's something obviously you're going to target. I think this outdoor season, we're just looking to make that next step, whatever that may be. So shaving off a couple seconds off of our times and sort of putting our names out there a bit more, sort of getting into these champ finals and really sort of giving the big names a run for their money, I suppose. It's just, we're in a good position now where we know, I guess, we've gained a bit more confidence this year already. Obviously, off the back of the weekend, sort of proving we can sort of compete amongst some of the big names in British athletics. So it's definitely something, obviously, we'd like to focus towards. So I definitely can't see why not.
Yeah, I wonder if you see opportunity in the 1500 especially. Yes, we've got some big names and we've got some of the best in the world, but outside of that, it seems wide open. And I wonder who's going to be able to step up, you know, and compete for those spots come LA, come Euros, even this year with maybe a few athletes, you know, someone like Whiteman maybe drifting towards a different event, not sure. But, and injuries are always a part of the game for some of the big three. So do you see an opportunity there? Because we've got a lot of guys on the bubble, but, you know, I think back 4 or 5 years ago, we had a little bit more depth in that 332 realm, and we seem to have more depth now, 335. Then there's a gap. Then we've got guys running 330.
Yeah, I definitely think there is an opportunity there. And again, I think it's also good to have the options. Obviously, me being mainly eight, but obviously I've sort of drifted more to 15 for the indoors. I guess it sort of opens up doors where I hopefully going forward can pick and choose depending on what I prefer. And I guess same with Ted, obviously, like, it is 15 times obviously a lot faster than mine. I nearly said a lot, but this weekend I'm a bit closer now. But I think just having that option of different races and having that sort of that range, like I said, like, we can compete at 800, then you think Ted's hanging on to the back of Whitfield in the 5K. I think that the range is there. And you said, there's obviously those big names, but obviously those other places are up for grabs. And I think, we just need to sort of going forward, like, take these opportunities when they come to us and, look to sort of hopefully fill that gap.
Well, gents, look, it's been a pleasure and thank you very much for coming on and sparing your Monday night for us. But we wish you all the best. And look, Jack, if you're chasing that standard, best of luck with that as well. We hope you can get on the plane to the world indoors.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Great to hear from Tunbridge lads, Jack and Ted Higgins, just then. Brilliant to see how their journey's going and can't wait to see how they progress over the next year or so. I'm sure big summer's coming up for both of them. Mate, just before you finish, better get into the National Cross and preview next week's episode.
Well, I can't wait for that, mate. Your boy's going
for the to retain the title, isn't he? So how's he looking, or are you not allowed to say?
To say, mate, not allowed to say on this podcast. No, things are looking good. Let's talk through some of the Hugo Milner, Slady. Will Barnaco's entered. Will Barnaco, National Cross Country. And look, I tried to get an answer out of Dean Miller whether he's going to run or not. didn't get an answer. So I presume he's running, to be honest. Callum Johnson as well, Angus McMillan. Good. And then on the women's side, you've got all of them are back from last year. Those who competed last year at the National Cross and medaled, you think Jess Gibbon, Amelia Quirk, Liv Matthias, Lucy Jones, Elena Curran, Charlotte Dannett, they're all back. Jenny Walsh. So, you know, you pretty much got the whole top 10 are all entered again for the women's national. And yeah, Kate O'Neill is another one. So you've got some really, really good races that are going to play out, both senior men's, senior women's. And on a new course, a new venue, new course that I've never been to. I know they've held a Northerns there before. So interested. Team result, I mean, that's difficult to call. I guess Herne Hill on the women's side, probably favourites if they have everyone turn out. Molly Smith, Sophie Tooley, Lucy Jones. On the men's side, would you say Tonbridge? Potentially Bedford might have a pretty strong team. Ben Alcock ran well over the half. Bedford get everyone turning out. They could have a team that can test Bristol and West. So, yeah, one of the arguably the best day in the British calendar.
There you go. It's your favourite day, isn't it? So, obviously, next week we'll be wrapping up some of the results on that. If you are interested in calling in to give your opinion, particularly if you're heading up, to the National Cross Country Champs next weekend, ping us a message and we'll get you on to chat next Tuesday. Thanks so much for listening to us. We'll catch you guys very, very soon.